You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys are going plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jays. Raining Jays.
Hey there, Merry Christmas, and it is a great Christmas for the Celtics and Celtics fans because Boston beats Philly on the big Christmas Day game, 121-114 in overtime, and we're here to talk about it here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. We're the Raining Jays. I am Mass Live's John Corrales, and he, next to me, to my right, as the garden empties out, is Samuel Jamison Packard III.
Ahoy, hoy.
Also known as Ladies Love Cool Jam. Lots to get to, man. This is crazy. We had a bunch of different kind of things happening in this game. The third quarter was trash. We got to get to that. The three-point shooting was nuts. Marcus Morris did Marcus Morris things and got Brad Stevens to talk about that a little bit. But we're going to have to start with the overtime and Kyrie Irving's 40-point night. 40 points for Kyrie Irving on 17 of 33 shooting. That's good. 5 of 10 from 3, that's also good. 10 rebounds, 4 offensive rebounds, 3 assists. This is what we would call doing it all in basketball parlance.
Yeah, he scored 14 of his 40 in the fourth quarter in overtime, 6 in overtime, 2 dagger 3-pointers, and he was just dominant the entire night. I thought a big point in the game is the Celtics are down in the fourth quarter. I think it was like the largest at the deficit at that point, 98-93. 8 minutes left. Kyrie checks back in the game and basically just single-handedly pulls them back out of it with just, I have in my notes, fancy shit. I don't remember exactly what that was, but that's what I have in my notes. And then he quickly gets an assist. But basically, he was their Celtics' main offensive weapon the entire night. And the Celtics' just general offense looks so much better when he's in the game. And he took 33 shots tonight, but that's what you feel like needed to happen because the Celtics offense, when he was not in the game, they kind of went back to their mid-range crap. I mean, it makes sense because he's that much more talented, but they really seem to struggle. And so when he is in the game, it feels like the best available option is Kyrie shooting. And so they needed all 33 of those shots tonight.
Yeah. I mean, look, Kyrie, this is early on. I think he was very into kind of putting on a show for the crowd, for the national TV audience. Let's see what his first half numbers look like. He was 23 points on 10 of 15 shooting. So nice shot distribution, split it up over the two halves, 3 of 6 from 3. But the 23 points and 3 of his offensive rebounds came in the first half. Comes out, set the tone. Brad talked about it after the game, and we talked about it after the last game. That him coming out being aggressive, it's opening things up for the rest of the team. It's opening things up for him, and it's basically letting him figure out exactly where he is shooting-wise in a game like tonight where everything was starting to fall early. Like, he came out and was super, super aggressive. That, for lack of a better term, sets the tone for the night, and even on a night where other guys don't have it, early on, Jason Tatum and Al Horford missing all of their threes. I mean, they did not shoot well. The Celtics weren't shooting well, and they weren't
especially
taking great
from
shots.
Deep. But yeah, they were not good from far. They're getting a lot of layups to actually start the game, and that was what Kyrie was doing. But no, they shot pretty terribly. And then I think Kyrie came out to start the third quarter and was just not great. He was 1 for 5, and I think the Sixers may just like put a lot more attention on him. And that's when the kind of he came out of the game, and then things kind of went downhill and went downhill quickly. And that's always like kind of, they gave up 39 points in the third quarter. And they're just, so in addition to not being able to score with Kyrie off the court, their defense was bad.
So early on, one of my notes here was that there was an energetic crowd the Celtics crowd, I think, against Philly, knowing the magnitude of this game, Simmons feeling, you know, that animosity towards Simmons. Boston loves to hate on Ben Simmons. The national TV, the Christmas Day game, every good thing the Celtics did was just magnified. Kyrie, I think, not just, we talk about the shots, but the hustle plays.
Oh, yeah.
He went, and I tweeted out, he was in full Smurf mode early on because he was just getting putbacks, flying around on D.
He had three offensive rebounds, I think, in the first quarter, and just was like dominating the offensive glass, just like we all expect. But it's pretty insane that another one I remember, he's flying around on defense. Smurf was slow to come around on the screen, and he just basically jumps off his man, who was TJ McConnell, who I felt like the Celtics were pretty much leaving the entire night, but jumped off his man to contest the shot, and was just like, oh, this guy's locked in.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there were a couple of moments. There was a three. Let's see. I wrote it. This is a third quarter, end of third quarter, where Kyrie, maybe it was the fourth quarter, Kyrie went for the went in for a layup, was down, and didn't get back in the play. And
Chandler knocked down
Chandler
a three.
Knocked
That's
down
the
three.
One that put them
the
up
the 98-91
before, yeah. Or and I guess not.
Yes. So there were, it's, if you want to nitpick, there were some instances where I think, but by then I think he was just gassed. And I was thinking he was just kind of hoping someone would step up, and nobody did. But he did come in late in the second quarter. Celtics were not great when he was off the floor. Then he comes in and he pushed the lead back to 9 with a shot off of Daniel Tice's back. The pass from, I think it was
Smart.
Was it Smart?
Yeah. Who got credited with the assist. Tice did not get the assist.
It should be like hockey, like just the last guy who touches it. That doesn't matter. But, yeah, that's how you knew Kyrie was hot, when the shot off of Daniel Tice's back went in. And that was a three. So, let's see. The other part of the overtime was that the 76ers kind of looked like they fell apart. And Al Horford's defense on Embiid late was awesome. And Embiid had a big game.
Huge
overall.
Game.
What do you have? 34 points, 16 rebounds for Embiid.
12 of 12 from the line.
That's big. I will say, as an aside on Embiid, I think most of the way the Celtics played him, I was totally fine with. The only time that I thought, holy shit, this guy is dominating, was when Horford was out and Tice was in, and Brad went out of his way to praise Daniel Tice, and he said he played hard, which he did. He didn't play
He wasn't effective in stopping Joel Embiid. He made it difficult, more difficult than I would have made it, but he was not effective.
That was an instance, and I bring that up not to, you know, crap on Tice, because Tice is very important. He hit some big shots tonight too. But the difference between Tice and Al Horford against Embiid, Tice just got dominated by Embiid mostly. And when that happens, Embiid drew a lot of people. When we talk about gravity again, he drew a lot of defense, and that's when he was able to kick it, and that's when they were able to get the Celtics in rotation. And that's where Embiid is a monster, just an unstoppable monster, if he's dominating like that. But when Horford's playing him, Embiid has to work. And even in the first quarter when Embiid scored, I was totally fine with it, because it takes Embiid against Horford. If he's going to score, it takes him 5, 6, 7 seconds in the shot clock. That's basically half the possession by the time they walk the ball up. Late in the game, I think Embiid gets tired later in games. He has turnovers a lot later in games. He stops making great decisions later in games. And when you have a vet like Al Horford, who is stronger than people give him credit for, to hold his position, to play him smartly and well, that is a huge factor in why the Sixers fall apart down the stretch in overtime.
Yeah, if you look at the overtime, they only scored one field goal. It's a Jimmy Butler shot. The rest are free throws. They're just basically, their offense was not great down the stretch. But I think the playing with, I mean, it's something, a theme we've been talking about since going back to last playoffs. You just like live with an Embiid post up.
Yep.
And you thought, at least I thought, the addition of Jimmy Butler, like, this is the first time the Celtics have seen Jimmy Butler on the Sixers. I thought he would make their offense more, I guess, dynamic, but he's really not like the main ball handler. Like, he probably like is best served as a shooter at this point, or like don't know. He missed a lot of mid-range jump shots tonight. He went like tried to ISO Jason Tatum a number of times, but this 76ers offense was nonetheless not very dynamic once J.J. Redick stopped hitting shots. He hit his first 5 threes tonight, and that's kind of what kept the Sixers with the Celtics. But once Redick stops hitting shots, it's basically all Embiid. And down the stretch, they got some free throws, but then after that, there's just some 24-second violations, some just bad turnovers. You talk about Embiid's turnovers late, but he's just like turnovers throughout the game. It just felt like he dropped like a number of passes and just like, okay, that's what it is. But then you look at Butler, he had 4 turnovers. Simmons had 4 turnovers. Celtics scored 22 points off those turnovers. I thought the Celtics, like, that's another thing that kind of got them back into the game, was just being able to score off turnovers. I thought Tatum feels like he's at his best when he's like in transition and using his length to score. Like, that's one of his best skills. But the other point I really wanted to bring up was when I started this rant, which feels like hours ago. Horford's minutes tonight.
Yes,
he had a 25-minute restriction, and so
played we talked 30.
He played 30 because of the overtime, but it was interesting. We all kind of knew going in it was 25 minutes, but he it's like, how are you going to use those in the second half? In the third quarter, they really fell down. Embiid scored like 8 points in a minute and a half with Tice on the floor, and you only had 8 Horford minutes going into the fourth quarter, and it was kind of strategic to try and see how Brad substituted in and out to try and sneak those minutes. And so it's basically any time Embiid came off the floor, you went to Tice, and that small lineup actually was pretty effective that, in getting them back in the game. But it was interesting to see those minutes because it was such a they needed Al Horford out there on defense.
Yeah, and it just goes to show how the matchups work, that Tice with not Embiid on the floor was very effective. Tice with Embiid on the floor was not, and that's when they go to Al Horford. Brad Stevens said after the game that the 25 minutes was a little conservative, and I'm sure if the Celtics had maintained that 10-11 point lead that they would have kept it closer to 25, but they talked to the training staff and everybody said he feels fine, he looks fine. They had that wrap on his leg, which I assume is some sort of heat to keep it kind of loose. And he was very important down the stretch. And it's, you know, a nice little thing, communication between everybody to let Al Horford get out there and play. Because even though his overall night, you look at the box score, and he was 2 of 10 and 0 of 5 from 3. This game would have been much different if Al Horford was hitting his threes. Just like it would have been much different if Jason Tatum was hitting his threes. He hit 1 3 late. I want to say, was that fourth quarter or overtime? But other than that, he was cold. In fact, you saw Tatum just like looking up to the sky. I'll talk a little bit more about Tatum after we take a short break. But the Horford game, offensively not particularly great, but still 5 assists, still 9 rebounds. And like I said, the defense on Embiid was critical down the stretch. And the part of why, like, Kyrie's offense was why the Celtics won on that end of the floor. But Al Horford's defense was a big reason why the Celtics won on the defensive end.
Let's not cut Al short with his just like wide elbow screens he's setting for Kyrie.
That's true.
A number of those just 3-point shots were just Al Horford setting. And I'm sure if I was playing against Al Horford, I'd be like, that's an illegal screen. It's not a Gortat level, but he gets a wide stance and really frees up Kyrie Irving. Also, I think he was the one who said the big screen. Terry Rozier hit a huge three to kind of get them back in the game. And it was just basically, it was a great possession because the Celtics were just playing fast. Kyrie actually got the rebound and passed it quickly up to Rozier, quick drag screen. And I guess we can talk. Well, let's save it for after the break because Terry Rozier earned a little attaboy from Brad Stevens at the press conference, which is something Brad Stevens doesn't normally do.
No. Went out of his way to give him the attaboy. Talk about that. We'll talk about Philadelphia's bench. We'll talk about Marcus Morris, who I thought was huge, huge, huge in this game. And I don't want that to go unnoticed. So we'll talk about that when we return on the Locked On Celtics podcast. One of my favorite things to say when it comes to basketball is that clutch shots don't necessarily fall in the fourth quarter. They can come earlier in games, and it's not necessarily the the textbook definition of clutch, but Marcus Morris hits clutch shots, as clutch a shot as you can hit in a stretch in the third quarter when Philly's on a run, and he comes in and settles things down. He came in the third, and I thought, like I say all the time in this podcast, when things go bad, he's there. He had a putback, and then he came up with a loose ball that he kicked up ahead, I think, for a layup, a transition.
I think it was an alley-oop to Kyrie to Horford.
Right. So that is something. And then the Celtics started to make some threes. Marcus Smart hit a couple of threes. Now, of course, and we'll get into this a little bit more, that didn't last. But at that point, it was critical for the Celtics. The game was starting to slip away, and Marcus Morris came in again and settled things down like he's done all year long. And I was saying to you earlier when we were watching the game, it's funny how quickly Marcus Morris has gone, to me, from the Celtics can trade him and get luxury tax relief to, oh my God, we're so screwed if he's not in the game and he can never leave.
Yeah, no, he was huge in that kind of Celtics struggling to score in the third quarter. He might have those big plays. As you mentioned, he's been the kind of stability for the Celtics for this entire year. He is the rock. He is.
It's wild. It's just wild to me that ISO Mook has become the rock. But he is. He's no longer ISO Mook. Like, he is just playing well, passing. He's making great plays.
And the thing I thought, like, he hit a jab step and then basically step back. And then knocked down a three. It's just, I don't know where this 3-point shooting has come from. I don't know his percentages this year. But like, at some point, it was like around 45% from three. I don't know if he's that high, but it feels like, what did he finish with tonight? I think he was 3 of 5. But two of those came in that third quarter you were mentioning. Yeah, those were clutch shots. And another, Daniel Theis, even though we were kind of talked about him getting destroyed at the end of the third quarter by Embiid, he hit a huge three there when the 76ers also could have gone on a big run. I think went from 5 to 2. And so they needed big shots, especially in the third, and Mook Morris was definitely there to deliver.
So Marcus Morris, just to get the right numbers, 3 of 5 tonight, so that's 60%. And then on the season, he is shooting 42.5% from three, and that's like
that's
a little bit
be
of
the
decline.
Best, that's he's been missing lately, and that's where he's still shooting 42%. That's insane.
Yeah, and let me just look up his career numbers real quick, because that is easily the best he's had. In fact, 38% was his high in the 2013-14 season in Phoenix. Shot 38%. And since then, 35 and like 36%, 36%, 33%, 37% basically last year with the Celtics, and now 42.5%.
5 percentage points. That's wild.
I mean, that's a huge, huge improvement. That's been big. I mean, how many times has he come in and hit big shots like that? In fact, I remember looking this up recently. He's only gone like 5 games this season without hitting a three, without hitting a single three-pointer, and the Celtics have only won one of those games. If I'm correct, I'm doing that off of memory, but I think the Celtics are like 1-4 or something when he's hit 0 three-pointers. So Marcus Morris's three-point shooting, critical to the Celtics.
The thing you mentioned while we were watching during the game, his defense and his ability to guard Ben Simmons. So in the stretch where Theis was on the court with Embiid and Simmons, it wasn't clearly Embiid had an advantage, but Marcus Morris did his role in his ability to slow down Ben Simmons, who we were talking about it. He ended up with close to a triple-double, but really was a non-factor in this game whatsoever. We did not mention him at all as like talking about the 76ers offense. He felt like he really didn't contribute. It seems like he's just a tall guy and he gets all these assist numbers. Like, I don't want to crap on Ben Simmons, but he's the tallest guy on the court, so he's going to get not the tallest guy on the court, but he's a very tall guy, so he's going to get rebounds, and then he's the sole ball handler, so he's going to get assists.
I feel like the Ben Simmons we see play against the Celtics is not the Ben Simmons that people see across the rest of the NBA because of the personnel the Celtics have. And in that conversation, the point that you made, I like that we're making each other's points, we're reminding each other how we responded. The point you made was, when Aaron Baines is here, Al Horford could go out and guard Ben Simmons. No one has a guy like that can stretch the floor on one end and put so much pressure on your defense and turn around and come around and guard Ben Simmons. And so you don't have Baines, but now Marcus Morris can go out and guard Ben Simmons, which Ben Simmons is a freak because he's the same size as Marcus Morris. He can do all those things. But
and your spacing doesn't take a hit because Marcus Morris is also a damn good three-point shooter.
Exactly. So I think defensively, that's the especially important role that Marcus Morris plays for the Celtics. So this has just been one big Mook love fest all season long. I'm definitely driving that train, and he has earned every single bit of it. He's just been huge. What else do we want to get into? We want to get into
Terry Rozier, I think, had a good game. Got a shout out from Brad. Finished with 10 points, but it was efficient tonight. 2 of 3 from deep. There's some points in the game where Terry's taking too many floaters or too many like just mid-range jumpers. Or I thought he did a better job of getting to the rim tonight, and the offense still wasn't great, especially in the first half when he was the kind of the main guy. Basically, him and Gordon were in the game, and neither of them could really do anything. But it felt like Terry was more of the ball handler tonight. In the second half, I thought Terry did a better job with respect to decision making, probing the defense, kind of engaging the big man in the pick and roll, making decisions out of that. And he was in the game late, which is something I noticed. Instead of Marcus Smart with like the normal starters, he was following around J.J. Redick a lot. I thought he was doing a good job on defense, and he knocked down those big threes. But I thought he had just a solid night. And mostly talking about it is because I think it's rare for Brad to give random shoutouts unprompted.
Completely, exactly. There is like Rozier. I feel like there's an expiration. Like if he's playing well, it's great, and then it starts as soon as he starts to like fall off. It's like okay, get him out. But again, tonight, as soon as I say, you know what, maybe we should get Rozier out of there, Rozier comes down and drills a three. The one three that he missed was, I think, a terrible shot. It was an early in the shot clock. I think he gets caught up in those opportunities a little bit. The one note that I made, Rozier had a drive in the third quarter to make it 83-83, which was like an example of good Terry Rozier and bad Terry Rozier, all wrapped up into one play, because he missed, I think, two or three guys that he could have hit for clean shots. And even, I think it was Tice, that was rolling, and he could have hit Tice as the roll guy, but instead he sort of used Tice as a lead blocker and went in that floater, which was...
But did he miss the layup?
No, he hit that.
He missed another layup later where he used Tice as like a seal up perfectly, and then he's on the right side, but I think he used his left hand. And so he, like,
He saw Embiid coming and kind of something spooked him a little bit.
But it was like a very good job to, he had the patience to wait and kind of saw that play develop and then easily got to the rim. And so it's too bad he didn't make it, but.
Yeah. So, but yeah, shout out to Terry Rozier. I bring up the same things with Rozier about his missing opportunities to hit guys that he looks to score first. And when he can't score, that's when he looks to pass. And I think sometimes the offense needs him to look to pass a little bit more. And I think that can get us into the third quarter a little bit, where the Celtics really, really struggled and damn near lost this game. Because I think the Celtics just weren't going through those progressions. They were just settling for those long twos. They really weren't fighting to get to the basket. They really weren't fighting to work their offense, and it cost them. There was a 13-2 run that Philly ended up tying the game. They were down 9, and they made this 13-2 run. I forget, no, that math doesn't work out. They were down 11, and the 13-2 run.
There you go.
So what? Carry the 2. Sorry. But, yeah, misses, bad shots. And those bad shots, when you miss some of those shots that the Celtics were taking, they are essentially turnovers because they just lead to these transition opportunities. Guys are stagnant because the ball is not moving, and just gives odd man opportunities for the other team. And that's when things really start to go bad.
Yeah, that's where another quarter where Jimmy Butler got going, scoring 13 points. And then they let Embiid get on that run towards the end of the quarter with Daniel Tice. It was just like post up Embiid a number of times.
This was the only quarter where Butler really had it going because he had a bad shooting night. And I don't know how many 9 of 21 nights we can count on for Butler. Although, I mean, he's not the most efficient guy. 24 points on 21 shots, but he had it going in that quarter. The Celtics really, like, Tatum struggled in that quarter, I think mostly because of the bad shot selection. Kyrie came in and struggled in that quarter. Just not a great quarter.
Can we talk about Jaylen Brown and Gordon Hayward having pretty much zero impact on this game?
Why don't we do that after the break?
Ooh, why don't we?
We'll do that. We'll talk about the Philly bench. We'll get to the tweets, and we'll wrap things up after a short break here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. I feel like we've been working our way down to the bad things, so let's talk about some of the bad things, like Gordon Hayward scoring 5 points on 2 of 6 shooting, 0 of 2 from 3.
He almost had the cool, like, a dunk that would have put the, like, made this place explode. He was so close,
so close, and he missed that layup. That was a critical layup too, might have prevented overtime, but I could go up and dunk it. Oh, I'm not high enough to dunk it. And he tried to lay it in and he missed. I've seen that happen before. Jaylen Brown in 20 minutes. 4 points, 2 of 7 shooting. Very similar to Gordon Hayward's numbers. 0 of 1 from 3. Completely a non-factor for most of the night. 3 rebounds, 2 assists. A steal, a block. But
some bad shots.
Some bad shots.
J.J. Redick. Anytime J.J. Redick's in the game, covered by Jaylen Brown, it's good for at least 2 or 3 fouls.
Yeah. And I did make the note that I didn't like some of the ways the guys were attacking the mismatches. And Tatum did it too against Embiid. Jaylen Brown did it against Redick. You got a guy like that. Now, Redick's got a worse reputation, I think, for his defense than he really should have. Like, he's not the worst defender out there. He can be active. And it's hard to, you know, he's not going to lock you up, but it's hard to drive on that guy. He's smaller. You know, you got to really get low with the ball, and Jaylen's handle's not great. But he tried to back him down, and then he did this fadeaway spinning jumper. I think he hit one, but then I just don't like when you have a mismatch and you take something that goes away from your strength. Back him down. Go up over him. Go towards the basket. Force him to foul you, get to the line. Maybe you get an and one. That's just the mismatch is there, and it's called a mismatch for a reason. You have some sort of physical advantage, something over this guy. And I just think sometimes Jaylen, I mean, how many times are we going to say this about Jaylen? He, I don't think that he's really seeing things on the floor fast enough sometimes, and I don't know why. Sometimes he sees things and he's great. Like he against, I want to say, the second Knicks game, he really attacked well, and he read things very, very well. Then sometimes he goes out there and it's just not there. It's hit or miss, and I don't know what he's thinking about, but he's clearly thinking, and I just want him to go out there and just understand the situation a little bit better. Because in those mismatches, he has opportunities to score.
The second unit really doesn't create good shots, and they don't really have a great facilitator. Like, Terry is kind of a natural point guard just based on size, but he's not someone who's going to finish at the rim. Hayward's not guys who like finish at the rim, and you don't want Jaylen Brown like dribbling. And so they struggle to create shots, and it's just nothing great from them.
But shouldn't Hayward in that situation, like if Terry Rozier... And they seem to sort of like split the time between Gordon Hayward and Terry Rozier bringing the ball up the floor when Kyrie's not out there or Smart's not out there. But at this point, you don't want to be predictable, but I really think that Gordon Hayward should just be initiating the offense and have Terry Rozier coming off of those pin downs, curling off and shooting or driving. Some of these guys, I think, just systematically you have to get them going to the hoop. When they're settling for jumpers, you got to just say, all right, these are the plays. These are the 10 plays that we have that I have to call to say, all right, I got to take it out of your hands. We're attacking the basket because I'm calling a play that calls for you to attack the basket. I think sometimes with these guys, and Brad Stevens lets some of these things just, they obviously he calls plays, but he lets these guys kind of read, react, and they're supposed to read and react. I think it's about time for a couple of these guys to understand, for Brad to understand with a couple of these guys, they're not reading the right things. They're not reacting the right way. So you have to like hold their hand a little bit. At some point, start calling the plays. Unless he's just hoping that over the next month or two or something, they're going to start reacting the right way.
I mean, I think Hayward has to be better. At some point, he has to be more dominant because he's a guy making $30 million a year. And that's kind of what you expect from him. I know he's coming back from injury, so I expect him to like regain health and get more comfortable. But I would rather see him try to impose his will on the game when he's like, try to be a star of that moment and kind of be more just like trying to do more. I think it just like, because if not, you're just going to have to bring Mook Morris in the game and he'll save everything.
Right. And just to bring in a couple of the Rain and Jay's tweets, just to incorporate those in. Robert Denton, Gordon Hayward plays for the Celtics, which there, I saw the complaints that sometimes, I don't know, Gordon Hayward just has these games and then maybe that's just a function of still getting himself back, but he does have to be better. When that's not happening, he has to go out there and just run the offense. But as Micah Malloy says, Hayward catches a lob every game now. He did go up and catch a lob, which is nice.
It wasn't a dunk, though. It was a layup, wasn't it?
It was a layup. Look, we can't criticize that. I'll take it.
Dunk the ball, Gordon. Dunk the ball. You can do it. Dunk the ball.
You want to talk about Philly's bench?
Oh, yeah, it's trash. Mike Muscala had a horrible game. He had one really big three, but other than that, it was 1 from 8 from distance. I mean, the bench gave them 13 points tonight. Muscala did nothing. McConnell, I thought, was all right in the fact that he was able to dribble the ball up and down the court, but like they were actively running away from him. He had like really no impact. They could double off him pretty easily. And then I guess Landry Shamet had some nice moments in that. I remember him hitting a three. Yeah, he hit a three, but he was a minus 10 too. They just, this is the thing about they already had kind of a questionable depth when they lost Bellinelli and Ilyasova.
Yep.
Then they make a trade, which trades two starters for Jimmy Butler, and now basically their guy who they thought was going to be a bench guy is Chandler. He's starting. Oh, and then there's the whole Markel Fultz thing. But we won't get to that, although he was in the building tonight. Was a story. He's here with the team celebrating Christmas, so that's fun. But they have no depth, and I just don't see how they're going to like be able to survive in the playoff series at the current roster.
Yeah, I don't see it either. They're very top-heavy, and obviously Jimmy Butler can be spectacular on both ends of the floor. Jimmy Butler played some really great defense tonight.
What do you think about Jimmy Butler not getting the game-winning shot? J.J. Redick got the coming off a screen. Isn't that Jimmy Butler's? Isn't that his thing?
That's his thing. You know, I have to go back and look at the play.
It was like a decent look for J.J., but it just...
Yeah. Well, they didn't call a timeout. And Simmons... I got to go back and look at the play. I do remember that Redick got the shot, but...
Simmons just basically held the ball for a while, and then I think Redick just came around the screen up top.
Yeah. I don't know why that... Look, Redick was hot early. I mean, Redick getting a jumper, you just need two. The game's tied. Redick getting the shot, it shouldn't be something that people question. Although I'm sure if somebody listens to a Philly podcast somewhere, the people are going to wonder why they're going to ask the exact same question, which you're right. Jimmy Butler, that's his thing. His thing is taking that shot. His thing is making that shot.
Redick only had 1 point in the second half. And then 1 point in overtime after scoring 15.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, he is the best shooter on their team, but Redick was silent in the second half.
The only reason early on that they were close, it was Redick and it was Embiid scoring early, but Redick was four of five early, and then he missed the rest of his threes. So, I mean, credit the Celtics for recovering. I don't know. I'm sure you could look back and say, Jimmy Butler should have taken that shot. And I'm sure that's a question that Philly's going
to
ask.
Speaking of that shot, but right before that moment, I want to call out Kyrie's insane shot. Whereas it felt the Celtics came out, it was like 35 seconds left, and they wanted to go 2-for-1, but it was just like Kyrie working on Jimmy Butler, and it didn't look like it was going to go well at all.
Yep.
But he just kept battling for space. And eventually just got a crazy high arcing shot to tie the game. It was quite ridiculous. He was pretty ridiculous the entire night. That combined with the two FU threes in the third was the prime Kyrie explosion moments in this building.
Yeah, yeah. That was a great shot. That was a great shot. And
it's okay when Kyrie takes mid-range jumpers because I'm always confident in it. He can take whatever shot he wants. I'm fine with it.
I will say, though, I think that there were stretches, especially in the third quarter, and he didn't hit those shots. I think especially in the third quarter where he was maybe searching a little too much for his offense. Like, early on, I don't know, maybe I'm being swayed by the makes and the misses. But in the third quarter, I felt like there were opportunities to work the ball a little bit more. And he was, I think it was hunting shots that weren't great. Didn't feel right. The momentum didn't feel right for those shots. But I guess I shouldn't question Kyrie Irving because he's awesome. He dropped 40 and they won the game.
And he does fancy shit.
Whatever that fancy shit was. Let's wrap this up a little bit here. I got only a couple of Rain and Jays hashtag. If you're on Twitter, you follow the game, you can hashtag us Rain and Jays during the game. And we will get to some, most, or all of these, depending on how many. Like at Beard Jam. I like that.
Yeah, that guy's got a great handle.
Yeah. Merry Christmas, Santa Drew. From Beard Jam again. Santa Kylaws. Just me making up names.
Just going for it.
Maiko, Kyrie with the FU3. Yeah, this was the overtime where... people were excited. And that's it. Alex at Straight No Chase. I'm afraid something is up with Al Horford's knee. Something much worse than what we're told.
Ooh, conspiracy theory.
I don't see why, because he went out there and he played. If it was much worse, then he wouldn't play. They got him back and he's played two straight games and he played beyond his minutes restriction. I think he's fine. And watching him with that wrap on his knee, that makes sense. I'm sure that's like a heating pad that they keep on there to keep it loose.
I think that's the thing. I think just the pad looks so bulky and daunting. It's like, oh man, he can't be right. But I thought athletically, he was fine tonight.
Look, that's those things. I don't have to get a closer look at
no
it.
No blocks, though. That's shocking. He's normally good for like at least one or two.
That's surprising. But yeah, I'm not worried about that. Ben Gates, never thought I'd be saying this, but Marcus Morris Sr. is an outstanding leader. Dude getting paid in the offseason. My biggest fear, and I just can't stop thinking about it, ever since Jay King said it, is him going to Philly.
Yeah, when they need the depth,
how much do they need a guy, even with the Celtics, if they could clone Marcus Morris, if they could throw a Marcus Morris out there against the Celtics with their own Marcus Morris, that would have been a huge difference.
Only if he had some sort of twin that they could put an insert into the situation for this exact purpose.
All right, that's it for the Rain and Jays hashtag.
Let's go.
Raining junk.
Kyrie could tell me the moon is a projection caused by Ukrainian rebels running a covert operation trying to steal the ocean of salt, and I'd be on board. My God, amazing.
It's not?
That is from @DamonJones.
That's a fantastically worded tweet.
It's fantastic. This is from the Lucky Franklin NBA podcast, who says, when all you hear is in your head is Jam Packard screaming, "You coward," when Ben Simmons won't even shoot a three in desperation and throws it out of bounds on the last play. We almost had a Ben Simmons' first three-point attempt tonight, but I think Embiid tipped it before it was going to go into the rim. Ended up being a foul, but I did wear my shoot a three coward shirt underneath.
Get out of here. There it is.
You had to cover it up because, you know, you got to be couth in these situations.
Sure, but it was sure. My subtle, you got the credential hanging around your neck. But
it was my subtle dig to throw off the juju of Ben Simmons.
That's
fantastic. The coward did not shoot. He did make his longest. He knocked down a jumper, a 22-foot jumper, his longest jumper of the season.
And he was forced to with the shot clock winding down. I have theorized, the way I brought it to you, I'll say it on the podcast. I think the best way for him to hit a three would be for it to be an accidental alley-oop that goes in. Because he had that alley-oop to Embiid. He tried to lob it over the top, and it looked like it almost hit the rim, which would have made it a three-point attempt, which would be hilarious. He can't intentionally hit his first shot.
Oh my God! The crowd would have given him a standing ovation.
Yes,
it would have been an amazing moment.
Yeah.
This one is from Jovian Shadow. Oh my God, this is infuriating. How hard is it to get mini basketballs into a full size hoop?
Oh yeah, it was the Papa shot thing at halftime, which I really didn't pay attention to.
Well, apparently the person was doing it was terrible, and it pissed off Jovian Shadow. And I'm all for having strong opinions about the general riffraff that goes around the Celtics game, so I'm going to read that one every time.
I'm in.
This is from Rice Matthias. I love the Celtics uniforms. Look like Brazilian uniform. Let's go Celtics. Viva Brazil. This guy's Brazil. One of our Brazilian listeners. Shout out to Latin America.
Shouts to
Brazil. What did you think of the new uniforms? I thought they were cool, but I kind of just forgot about them after the game started.
I love them. I think they look cool. I think you know they're only wearing them occasionally. Obviously, I'm an old guy. I'm a traditionalist. I like the white uniforms at home and the green uniforms on the road. However, every once in a while, mixing it up, I'm totally down with that. I think this year, the uniforms have been great. The City Edition white with the yellow has been great. I thought these, especially when you look at them up close, the detail is really, really cool. I think they've done a great job. I'm in on these.
All right. I'm going to go to the rest of my junk drawer. Starts out pregame. Get to hear Brett Brown talking, and that's always fun.
That's always great.
He's just an old Mainer with a great Mainer accent, and man, he is loquacious. He just talks and talks and talks. Brad's pregame media availability is normally like 5 minutes. Brett Brown today was like a solid 13, and I was just like, wow, this is crazy.
He spins yarns like an old Mainer would.
Yeah, it's perfect. Also before the game, Baines addressed the crowd, told them to have a Merry Christmas and then Happy Holidays, and then said it was Festivus for the rest of us. And I just loved Baines addressing the crowd, and I think he should do it before every game.
I would love it. Baines would be saying shit before every game.
We could just do any Celtics player, but Baines would be the best at it.
I think, absolutely. Or Mook. I think Mook. But like,
who knows? He could rotate it. I think it should be whoever is the best player in the last game.
Okay.
It's an honor.
A lot of Kyrie.
Yeah, seen some wild stuff. There's one call where the refs just had no idea what happened, and it just kind of it was a weird moment in the game. It's definitely some junk. off Tice play. There was a Simmons Butler pick and roll that just looked like, I don't know why they don't do that more often, but it easily got a dunk for Ben Simmons, and they're so dynamic, I don't know why the 76ers don't do more of that, just trying to throw it in. Marcus Smart knocked down a three. They went under his pick, and he immediately shot and knocked it down. It was a big three. And then immediately coming down the next time, he tried the same thing, but like 5 feet behind the three-point line, and it was a bad miss. And we both like turned to each other and were like, we knew he was going to take that.
That was, yeah. I miss Heat Check Smart. It's been a little while. Usually, and Marcus Smart is always good for like a heat check, even when he's not even hot, like his first shot of the game. But we got him here tonight. That was a good one.
One of the weird things about sitting up top in the Halo is you can sometimes hear individual chanters who are on the balcony. But one I heard tonight was one guy just trying to start a skin the zebras chant, like an anti-referee chant. I was like, oh, whoa, buddy, skin the zebras. I was like, this guy, that's a little aggressive, but I like it.
Very aggressive.
I just like the idea of just one guy chanting. There was another guy who was just like trying to scream and was like, I know you can hear me, Jimmy Butler. Just having one voice stick out in that scenario is always hilarious. Let's see what other junk I have left. Sometimes I take too many notes and I forget to delete the super
the non-junk
dumb ones. Yeah, I mean, there's like
I got
actual
a junk.
Basketball ones. Go for it.
My one junk is, speaking of Brett Brown, that dude is like 5-6 feet onto the court.
He was close to the lucky logo.
Like, the referee running up the court had to get out of his way. And, like, I don't want to be like a narc or anything like that, but that's a tech. Like, that should be a technical foul. You're not allowed to do that. And I get it. It's allowed and everything, and it's not really called. But, like, it's funny. But he was, when the Sixers were in their half court, he was way out. Like, I thought he was going to be on top of the red R-back logo. He damn near crossed half court, was part of the set, like he was coaching in practice.
Speaking of Tex, he was way far out there, but
they would never do that in the NBA.
No, of course not. Of but, course not.
Marcus Smart's tech was just so stupid.
Oh, yeah. Two-hand push on Simmons.
It was like classic, like his frustration. It looked like he got touched in the face a little bit, and you're just like, it was his natural reaction. He immediately got pulled, but it wasn't a good situation. The only other thing is I have Tatum had some really dope block of Chandler and sent him packing. And it was a huge moment in the game. That's the only thing I have in my junk.
All right. Well, then, we'll wrap it up. It's Christmas. Well, day after Christmas. Would that be Boxing Day in Canada?
Sure.
I think so.
Happy Boxing Day, eh?
Happy. So, yeah, happy Boxing Day. And whatever other day it's called everywhere around the world. I think it might be Boxing Day in other parts of the world, too, but.
Is it in all of the British rules? Is it Boxing Day in Australia?
It might be.
Well, it's a Wikipedia Boxing Day.
Yeah, but I think it's a thing. I don't know why.
British Empire, yeah, former British Empire.
Okay,
there you go.
What do you do on Boxing Day? Is that just like a?
It's a bank holiday.
You just read the Wikipedia entry. I mean, is it like you physically box things up to get like the gifts that you don't want and you return them? Like, okay. Box them up, send them back.
Or it's like, a shopping holiday.
Yeah.
Much like Black Friday. Oh, okay.
Okay.
Boxing Day sale. So their Black Friday is Boxing Day because they're putting all the things in boxes.
Okay.
In recent years, they've tried to expand it to Boxing Week. And they're getting selfish here. The retailers are always messing around. Do you know in the late 1930s, to try and support the retailers, it was Thanksgiving was late one year, and then FDR was just like, nope, we're pushing Thanksgiving up a week, and people were pissed. And so in 1939, they had two Thanksgivings.
They had two? What?
Yeah, some states were like, all right, we'll follow the president, and then the rival states were like, this is outrageous. The president can't determine when Thanksgiving is, and they had two Thanksgivings.
Well, that's something you're never going to hear on any other.
Look up Wikipedia Franksgiving, people out there. It's wild. Wild stuff.
I'm going to do it as soon as I wrap up this podcast because I did not see that one coming. That was a new wrinkle on this one. So subscribe to this podcast for all your Franksgiving takes. And if you are a regular subscriber, that's a 5-star worthy take right there. So 5 stars, give us a good review. Share the podcast. Tell everybody to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.
It's all started because we talked about Boxing Day.
Boxing Day. Oh, God.